Chapter 7, The Least of All Seeds, printed in the Review and Herald, April 11, 1935. Many parts of the work being carried forward in the proclamation of the gospel are beautifully illustrated in the Master's parables of the growth of the mustard seed. This little seed, the least of all seeds, when it is grown, is the greatest of all herbs. In a special manner, this illustrates the beginning and development of the publishing work among Seventh-day Adventists. The first seed was the little paper, Present Truth, printed in Middletown, Connecticut, in July 1849. In time, it was to develop into a sturdy plant. The burden of its message was the restoration of the Bible Sabbath and faith in the soon return of Jesus. With these doctrines, there came to be associated, in process of time, a number of other tenets of faith, all uniting to form a wonderful system of truth which is today being heralded to the world in scores of publications. The last of the four numbers of Present Truth, published in Middletown, Connecticut, bears the date of September 1849. In this number, there appeared, from the pen of Ellen G. White, a timely appeal to the dear brethren and sisters regarding consecration and sacrifice. From this article, we quote three paragraphs. The Lord has shown me that His grace is sufficient for all our trials, and although they are greater than ever before, yet, if we trust wholly in God, we can overcome every temptation, and through His grace come off victorious. We must be partakers of Christ's sufferings here, if we would share in His glory hereafter. If we seek our own interests, how we can best please ourselves instead of seeking to please God and advance His precious suffering cause, we shall dishonor God and the holy cause we profess. The Lord has shown me that precious souls are starving and dying for want of the present sealing truth, the meat in due season, and that the swift messengers should speed on their way and feed the flock with the present truth. I heard an angel say, "Speed the swift messengers, speed the swift messengers, for the cause of every soul will soon be decided, either for life or for death." Not only had the promise of sufficient means for the sustenance of the paper by donations from its readers been fulfilled, but there was a surplus in the treasury. With the burden of advancing the message, James and Ellen White were not content with publishing only, but felt that they must visit the scattered believers, as far as means would permit, and encourage them by the ministry of the Word. Besides those whom they had visited in former journeys, a number of interested readers of the Present Truth had written to them, and by visits in person, they desired to strengthen the ties thus formed. And so it was that, with their 6-week-old baby, Edson, they left Rocky Hill for nearly 4 months of labor in the New England states and in New York. Joseph Bates joined them in their travels for 2 months. They spent the first weekend at a conference of believers in Granville, Vermont, and the following week they attended a conference at North Paris, Maine, appointed to begin September 14. Of this meeting in Paris, Ellen White wrote, "Brethren Bates, Chamberlain, and Ralph were present, also brethren and sisters from Topsom. One F. T. Howland, a notable fanatic, was present. He had long troubled God's children with his errors and harsh spirit. Honest souls whom the Lord loved, but who had long been in error, were at the meeting. While engaged in prayer, the Spirit of the Lord rested upon Brother Stockbridge Howland. His face was white, and a light seemed to rest upon it. He went toward F. T. Howland, and in the name of the Lord bid him leave the assembly of the saints. Said he, 'You have torn the hearts of God's children and made them bleed. Leave the house, or God will smite you.' That rebellious spirit, never before known to fear or to yield, sprang for his hat and in terror left the house." More than 4 years had passed since 14 persons in Paris had begun the observance of the Sabbath through the influence of a single copy of T. M. Preble's tract. But their common interest in the Sabbath was not strong enough to hold them together. The influence of fanatical teachers, of whom this Mr. Howland was one, had wrought a cruel work among the Sabbath keepers there. Dissension was so rife that for 18 months they had not met together on the seventh day. But now their time of deliverance had come. Writing further of this solemn meeting, Mrs. White says, "The power of God descended something as it did on the day of Pentecost, and five or six who had been deceived and led into error and fanaticism fell prostrate to the floor. Parents confessed to their children and children to their parents and to one another. Brother J. N. Andrews, with deep feeling, exclaimed, 'I would exchange 1,000 errors for one truth.' Such a scene of confessing and pleading with God for forgiveness we have seldom witnessed. That meeting was the beginning of better days to the children of God in Paris, to them a green spot in the desert. The Lord was bringing out Brother Andrews to fit him for future usefulness, and was giving him an experience that would be of great value to him in his future labors. He was teaching him that he should not be influenced by the experience of others, but decide for himself concerning the work of God." In the issue of The Present Truth following this meeting appears the first communication from John N. Andrews. In giving a report of the Paris conference, he says, "Our minds were deeply interested in the solemn truths presented before us, and at the conclusion of the meeting a general determination was manifested to lay aside forever the painful views by which we have so long been separated, and once more to unite in the great and important truths of God. It was a season of heartfelt confession and deep humiliation before God, such as we trust will not soon be forgotten." The contacts made at this time with the Andrews, Stevens, and Stoll families no doubt had a large influence in the selection of Paris a year later as the place from which to publish the Review and Herald. After the meeting in Paris, they visited Gorham and Topsham, Maine. Here they received letters urging them to visit New York State again. November 3, 1849, they attended a large gathering in Oswego, New York. From that place, Ellen White wrote, "Our labors at this time were difficult. Some of the poor seemed to be envious of the rich, and it needed much wisdom to reprove the errors of the poor without strengthening the hands of the rich. If we reproved the selfishness of the rich, the poorer classes would respond, 'Amen.' We presented before both classes the responsibilities resting upon the wealthy to make a right use of that which God had lent them, and held up before them the suffering cause of God, which was the true object of their liberalities. I was also shown that it was not the duty of the wealthy to help those who had health and could help themselves, that some were in very poor circumstances who need not be thus situated. They were not diligent in business. They lacked economy and good management, and it was their duty to reform. Instead of receiving help from their brethren, they should carefully husband their time and provide for their own families and have something with which to help the cause of God. They were as accountable to God for the strength which He had given them as the rich man is for his property. We then decided that it was our duty to labor in the state of New York. My husband felt a burden upon him to write and publish. We rented a house in Oswego, borrowed furniture from our brethren, and commenced housekeeping. There my husband wrote, published, and preached. It was necessary for him to keep the armor on every moment, for he often had to contend with professed Adventists who were advocating error, preaching definite time, and were seeking to prejudice all they could against our faith. We took the position that the time they set would pass by. I was shown that the honestly deceived would then see the deception of some whom they then had confidence in, who were zealously preaching time, and they would be led to search for truth. The fifth number of Present Truth, published 5 months after the first, was printed at the office of R. Oliphant, Oswego, New York. Of the conditions under which this young couple with a small babe had gone from place to place prior to their locating in Oswego, we have a few glimpses in their correspondence. In apology for not writing more frequently, Mrs. White wrote to some of her friends early in 1850. "We love you and love to hear from you. We should have written before, but we have had no certain abiding place, but have traveled in rain, snow, and blow with the child from place to place. I could not get time to answer any letters, and it took all James's time to write for the paper and get out the hymn book. We do not have many idle moments." They traveled by private carriage or sleigh, by train or canal boat, and in a 3-foot trunk they carried all their worldly possessions, clothing, household goods, books, and other incidentals. 6 numbers of Present Truth were sent out from Oswego. Here, by request of readers, there were regularly admitted to the columns of the little paper reports from laborers in the field and letters from brethren and sisters east and west. The readers were greatly encouraged as they saw the Advent and Sabbath message gaining converts in many places. The movements of Brethren Bates, Holt, Edson, Rhodes, and others were followed with the deepest interest, and the words of praise and good cheer expressed by humble members of the little companies were exceedingly refreshing. The publishing of this paper was an important step in advance. It proved to be a strong branch of the mustard plant. As an avenue of information and good cheer to accompany doctrinal and moral instruction, it was greatly loved. It has developed with the message until now thousands of readers depend for information and encouragement upon the reports from the field appearing regularly in the Review and Herald. In the second December number of 1849, Elder White confessed the narrowness of his expectations and plans when he began to publish. Here is the statement. "When I commenced the Present Truth, I did not expect to issue more than 2 or 3 numbers, but as the way opened before me, and as the cause of truth seemed to demand something of the kind, I have continued thus far. While publishing the 4 first numbers in Connecticut, the brethren sent in more means than was necessary to sustain the paper, which I have since used in traveling to visit the scattered flock." At that time he had but a limited conception of the meaning of the statement that from this small beginning streams of light would shine clear around the world. But to those who have labored for 50 years since he laid down the burden in 1881, these words are an unfolding mystery. In 1929, just 8 decades after James White began in faith to publish, more than 4,000 persons were engaged in the work of manufacturing and selling Seventh-day Adventist periodicals and books. In the same year, there were sold in all parts of the world books and periodicals to the value of nearly $5 million. Truly, the mustard plant has grown to be the greatest of herbs and is supporting a large number of birds lodged in its branches.